So, obedience and the heart. So, we're going to focus on obedience in this session, and then in our last session after lunch, we'll focus on disobedience. Okay, so this one we're going to talk a lot about obedience, and especially the requirement of our children to obey their parents, to submit to parental authority. So, let's look again at Ephesians 6, 1 through 4, and we're going to focus on verses 1 through 3. This time, but we'll read all four of them again. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. All right, so let's break this down. Verses 1 through 3 is our focus here. Who is Paul speaking to in verses 1 through 3? Children. Excellent engagement from the rear. Well done. He's not addressing parents here. This is a message for young hearts. Isn't that fun and encouraging to think about reading this on a Sunday morning? They would have read this in a gathering, and Paul wrote to the kids. I just think that's so cool. And it's just great sometimes in sermons to address children. Because they're part of the body here. So this is a message for young hearts. And what does he command the children to do? Go ahead. Obey. Yes, obey and honor their parents. But he doesn't stop there. He adds a crucial qualifier. What is the qualifying statement about parental authority? What's the crucial qualifying statement about parental authority? Needs to be in the Lord. That's right. That's important. It means parental authority is exercised under God's authority and is meant to reflect Him, His wisdom, His care. And finally, what blessing does Paul promise? That it may go well with you. So obedience is not about making life easier for mom and dad. It's about helping children flourish under God's rule. Obedience is not about making life easier for mom or dad or having the home you want or whatever it looks like. It's about helping your children flourish in God's kingdom. So let's focus on point number one, look at point number one, the call to obedience. The call to obedience. When Paul tells children to obey their parents, he's not simply giving rules. He is inviting them into a circle of blessing. This is not original to me. It comes from a helpful parenting book on these issues. They call it a circle of blessing. And it's a helpful way to visualize what obedience really does. God has drawn a circle around our kids, and the boundaries of that circle are honor and obedience. So I have it right there for you to see. Inside this circle, life is safe and it's guided and it's aligned with God's design. But outside the circle, the consequences of disobedience and disrespect begin to take their toll. And so God's promise is clear. Obedience brings blessing. And this is really important for us to get. Their obedience must be secured not for our sake, but for their sake, for their good. Teaching and training our kids to honor and obey us is not about making our quality of life better, but about making their quality of life better. God's promise to our children is if they honor and obey us, it will go well with them. Living under godly authority cultivates godly character, godly wisdom, and godly flourishing in a way that autonomy, independence, cannot. Disobedience moves a child out of the circle of blessing, and it falls to parents then to patiently teach and train to instruct and discipline them back in. So that's what you have in the second picture there. You can see this child is in danger because he's moved outside of the circle of blessing. He's, arrow at the top, he's disobeyed or dishonored, and the life in that place is difficulty and hardship. But through our discipline and correction, our discipline and training, our discipline and teaching, instruction, we can bring them back into the blessing of the circle of blessing. Why does God tie obedience to blessing? Well, it's because we are creatures who live under authority. From the Garden of Eden, where Adam was called to work under God's instruction, to kingdom life under the rule of Jesus Christ, we live under authority. And this shows us from Scripture, freedom and flourishing are found in obedience, not independence. Freedom and flourishing are found in obedience, not independence. Teaching children to make every choice independently before they are ready gives them a false sense of freedom and a misunderstanding of true liberty. Psalm 119 makes this point beautifully. It says, I will keep your law continually, forever and ever, and I shall walk in a wide place, for I have sought your precepts. So obedience opens the way to a wide place. The space of blessing, growth, and true freedom. I love another one in Psalm 119 says, I've seen the end of perfection. I've seen things and they've not gone to perfection. But your word, your ways are exceedingly broad. Like there's no end to their perfection. So practically speaking, parents can help children understand this circle of blessing. In fact, practically speaking, I would consider you showing them a visual of it. Draw the circle and mark it out just like I have here for you. In our dining room, we have a whiteboard, some nice whiteboards and calendar hanging up on the wall. And so, you know, especially when they're young, as they're young, we go through seasons where we draw the circle of blessing up there and we help them, so we're going over it regularly. And that becomes a part of instruction and discipline, is explaining, you know, you're in the circle of blessing, you're out of the circle of blessing, and mom and dad are just trying to help you get back in because life under the rule of God is a place of flourishing and good. Ultimately, the call to obedience is a call to life, a life under God's authority, guided by his wisdom, blessed in every area. Children who learn this early are being trained not just for the home, blessing the home, but for blessing in life under the Lord and every season. Obedience is their invitation to walk in that wide place of God's blessing. So let's talk about what obedience looks like in the early years, the practice of obedience. The practice of obedience, number two, the practice of obedience. So we're talking about obedience. Ted Tripp defines obedience, I think, in a helpful way. He calls it the willing submission of one person to the authority of another. The willing submission of one person to the authority of another. And I think it's helpful here. Obedience is not merely compliance. He calls it a willing submission. So I see in this, you know, two dimensions. First is the action of doing, the action of obedience, right? It's visible and concrete. When a child follows a command, whether that, you know, that means doing what they are told to, you know, so children are to obey your parents. And so if we say, put your toys away, or if we tell them, don't hit your brother, it looks like putting their toys away or not hitting their brother. And these actions matter. There's the action of obedience. But there is also, the second dimension, the attitude of the heart, or the attitude of obedience. This is where the willing part becomes crucial. Obedience must be an act of the child's will. I think what I'm trying to get at here, when I'm calling my kids to obedience, I don't want a book that they will bend their will to mine because I'm bigger than them. And that's not the kind of obedience I want. I don't want them to just do what I tell them to do because I can make them. I want them to learn to choose to submit their will to mine. I want to see that, like in their heart, in their face, in their mind. They want to do something. Dad has said no, and they're choosing to submit to my will. Because that's what obedience looks like for us in the kingdom, doesn't it? We have desires. We want to do them. God says no, and we have to choose to submit our will to His. So that attitude of willing submission is really important. That is willingness, their willingness to do that, the act of their will to do that, is an act of the will because obedience is a moral choice they are making. They are called to it, and they are choosing. They're making a moral choice. Is the child deciding, even though I may not feel like it, I will do what is right because I respect the authority God has placed over me? They're making a moral choice. So imagine a child who has just been asked to clean up their room after a long day of playing. They may be tired. They may be annoyed. They may be reluctant. But I am calling them to submit their desires, preferences, feelings to Dad's will and to obey. If they drag their feet or complain or try to negotiate endlessly with me, their feelings may justify their resistance, but their will is not submitted to mine. So true obedience requires the will to align with the command even when the feelings resist. And this is where obeying parents becomes a training ground for trusting and obeying the Lord Himself. So in our family, we, you know, for the kids, we defined obedience. You know, kids, what you got to train your kids, you got to instruct them. So in instructing them, what is obedience? Well, we told them obedience is fast, happy, and all the way. Right? It's not just doing what we said. It's doing it fast, happy, and all the way. Or some families say it, obedience is all the way, right away, and with a happy heart. All the way, right away, and with a happy heart. Both are saying the same things. Fast, happy, and all the way. So just kind of breaking that down. Fast, happy, and all the way. Obedience is one without challenge. Obedience without challenge is what it looks like in practice. True obedience does not argue, does not make excuses, it does not resist. When your child meets an instruction with complaints or explanations or tantrums, that is not genuine obedience. For example, if you say, put your toys away, and your child responds, but I want to play more, or you announce, it's time for bed, and they respond, I hate going to bed. Obedience needs to be without challenge, without excuse, or else it's not really obedience. And this kind of behavior needs to have a consequence. You have to treat it as disobedience. Having said that, aside, or an important point to make under that, children also need to be able to have the ability to appeal respectfully. Okay? This is important. If they're supposed to obey you without challenge, you also need to have... You need to be mature enough to recognize that an appeal is not the same thing as a challenge. And especially as they grow older and begin to navigate differences of understanding and more complex situations, they got to be able to have an appeal. So teach them when they're young how to have respectful appeals. So for a little kid, you know, I don't know, around the age of 11 or something, or three, I mean, not little kid, 11. For a little kid around the age of three, you know, 2 to 4, something like that, you got to just listen for appeals and be discerning. Pick up the difference between when they're challenging you and when they're just trying to understand, or they have like a really strong desire, like, you know, they're building with Legos and they're just really excited and they've almost got their tower done, and you say, it's time to clean up, and they're like, oh, but my tower's not finished. You know, that could be a complaint, or it could just be like a really strong desire and it's so close, I really want to do it. Okay, well, I hear an appeal in that, right? So you just got to learn to be discerning. This is where giving them your attention, so you really are paying attention, know their frame, you know. As they get a little older, 4 or 5, you know, start teaching them a process for appealing. You know, just simple things like where they can respectfully, it's time to clean up your Legos. Yes, Dad, but I'm really close to finishing this tower. Can I have one more minute, please? And then teach them. If you say yes, yay. If you say no, then they respect that. So they give that. And remember, we want to say yes as much as we can. We want more yeses than nos. That's our spirit. So we want to be generous to them. We often want to say yes if we can, right? But they need to have that safety valve, right? Where they are able, they have permission, and they know they do, to appeal our directives. And know that we'll respectfully consider a reasonable and humble appeal. Or, this is another thing that can happen. You know, you go into a bedroom and you tell them, hey, in just a minute, you need to put your toys away. We're going to be getting ready for bed. But they know that your wife, your spouse, gave them an extra 30 minutes to play that night. And you don't know that. Well, the more kids you have, the more this happens. Okay, just so you know, be aware. So you have to give them a place to be able to say, Dad, can I tell you something? Mom said I could have an extra 30 minutes tonight. Is that okay? Oh, yeah, sure, of course. I didn't know that. Go verify. Make sure that's true. The more kids you have to verify too. A united front. That's important. We'll get to that. But my point is they should be able to say these things, right? We're not so wooden and dictatorial. Also, can I just put an aside? I don't know if I say this somewhere else in my notes or not, so if I don't, let me just say it right here. What I just gave in that example is I told them, hey, in 1 minute, you're going to need to... That, giving them that heads up is so important, if you've never heard that before. Give them the heads up. In 5 minutes, we're leaving, you know. In 10 minutes, we're leaving, you need to start cleaning up. Give them that off-ramp, because you would want the same thing, right? No one wants their spouse to come into the room and say, okay, hey, whatever you're doing, you're done, we're leaving. You're like, wait, what? No, I was in the middle of, you know. Like, no one likes that, so don't treat your kids like that. Give them the heads up. Let them know what's coming. Help them to transition. So much stress can be avoided just by helping them to transition, because it helps you to transition, right? Like, wouldn't it be nice if your kids came and said, hey, in about 1 or 2 minutes, I'm going to be tempted, and I might throw a fit. You'd be like, oh, that's good to know. Okay, I'm going to get ready for this. I'm going to help you into it. Like, it'd be nice if they did that to you. They don't always do that to you. So if you could do that for them, help transition them, it's so huge and helpful. It's just considering their frame and loving them. But that said, teach them to recognize authority, but also how to navigate circumstances respectfully. All right, so that's obedience without challenge. Second, obedience without delay. Fast, happy, and all the way. Without delay, obedience must be immediate. A child who says yes, but then dilly-dallies for a couple of minutes is not obeying. That's disobedience. Your son's playing with Legos. You ask him to pick up his toys. He says yes, or he says okay, but he keeps working on that tower instead. Or you ask him to come to you, and instead of coming right away, he finishes collaring. He says, okay, and then he keeps collaring. Or he kind of dilly-dallies. You ever have a kid do this? He's like supposed to be coming to you, and they're kind of like, you know, doing this. And then they like start doing this, and they're like, you're like, what are you doing? And I'm helping mom. She likes it like this. It's like, well, that's not what I told you to do, right? So... It's amazing what they find to distract themselves by. My point is obedience needs to be immediate or else it's not obeying you. Now, I'm not saying you need to have a stopwatch to time them, you know, but you want to see them submitting their will to yours. Again, give them your eyes, pay attention, watch. You actually have to discern these things. And this is important because the goal of obedience is to train the will to submit to another's authority, to recognize that God ordains authority for our good. So when a child delays, what they are doing is they are, if it's disobedience, right, they are asserting their own autonomy instead of practicing submission, which is only going to hinder their growth in Christ. So again, this is where giving them a heads up is really helpful. Learning to you know, we're going to talk about this too, but you know, don't make really hard commands to your kids. You know, consider their frame. You know, so if your kid's obsessed with Legos right now, and you know that when you go in there and you tell them it's time to clean up, that's going to be really hard for them. Like, you've got to consider that before you give them instructions. Because if you give them a command, God calls them to obey. So be careful with the commands you give them. That will provoke your children needlessly. If you give them a command, God calls them to obey. So be careful with the commands you give them. Another thing that can be helpful to do in the regard of without delay is to, you know, make that eye contact with your kids or bring them to you for instruction and talk it through, you know, eye to eye, so that you know you're processing with them, you're talking with them, you're communicating with them. Also, getting them to respond is really important. You know, yes, Daddy, yes, Mom, so that they're acknowledging, they heard, they understand, so that you can then hold them accountable to that. All right, number three, obedience without grumbling. Without grumbling. True obedience has to be joyful, willful, not reluctant or resentful. Now, we say happy, fast happy in all the way, because it just sounds better than fast not grumbling in all the way. Like, you want to make a positive thing, you know? And so we say fast happy in all the way. Maybe that's unfair, because I don't always expect my kids to be like, sure, Dad, yeah, you know, like, I'm so happy. Legos was fun, but obeying you is so much more fun, Dad. Woo! You know, like, I'm not expecting that kind of happy. Although sometimes they give that to you, and that's wonderful. But what I'm really looking for is not arguing and complaining, not grumbling, right? Philippians 2:14 says, do everything without complaining or arguing. So when children grumble, resist inwardly, but even outwardly they're performing it. Even outwardly they're doing it. Well, then they're not actually submitting their will fully to you, right? If they're like, you know, you say, hey, kids, you know, like, you made a mess over here. Like, you need to pick that up. And they're like, like, are they obeying? Yeah, they're picking it up, kind of, as I make a mess, right? But they're not doing it with a submitted will. They've not really submitted their will to ours. So that kind of grumbling and complaining is not obedience. We can't obey God in that way. And so we have to train our children not to obey in that way, but instead to do so willingly. So let me give you some practical tips for teaching obedience. This is not just about obedience without delay. This is just some practical tips. And we're going to go quickly through this. One, teach the standard clearly. So this is where I said, you know, in our family, we defined it, obedience is fast, happy, and all the way. You know, teach your kids a standard that is clear so they know what obedience looks like in your home. Second, use the circle of blessing. I won't talk about that more because I already have. Third, face-to-face commands. Whenever possible, try to look your kids in the face, get down on their level, or bring them to you to make sure communication is good and clear. Four, use positive reinforcement. This is for teaching obedience. Use positive reinforcement. Praise obedience when it occurs. Teach them that you delight in their submission, just like God delights in our submission. Celebrate when they do well. Too often we just, you know, focus on disobedience, and we don't just like, oh, you did it, man. Good job picking that up, and good job obeying Mom. Good job obeying Dad. That is so great. Give me five. Or some, bless them. You know, I love doing that. I'm like, hey, you obeyed really fast. Why don't you take five more minutes and go play with this? Like, yes. Like, just show them your delight and love to reward them. Number five, consistency is really crucial. Obedience only works when children know that commands are meaningful and consistently enforced. Consistency is crucial. So, you know, be consistent in enforcing it, being consistent in the rules of your home. Like, consistency is important. Kids need that structure. Number six, unified parenting. You got to have the same standards together. You know? If Dad always allows this, but Mom never does, that's really hard on a kid. And they learn how to play you. And so a united front is really important. Number seven, train. Don't just correct. Train them. So correction is kind of the response. You did this poorly. Let me correct you. Training is the, like, ahead of time instructing. So we would practice obedience a lot, or we do, with our little kids. And so, this is especially for little kids. Make a game out of it. This, you know, once a week, play a game for a few minutes of just like, all right, this is what I would do. Like if we were in a room like this, I'd tell one of my little ones like, all right, I want you to go hide under that row over there. And when you hear me call you to come, I want you to come fast, happy, and all the way. Okay? So then I'd be like, you go over there. Like, Madeline, come here. And I'd be like, oh, that was awesome. You did it. Woo! And then we always do the reverse. That's fun. They like that a lot more. I'm like, okay, now I want you to go sit on that chair over there. And when I say come, I want you to come like you're pouting and angry and complaining. And so then we do that. And then they're slow. And I'm like, oh, no, this is so bad. And they're like laughing, but they're coming. And then we reverse it. I'm like, okay, now what do you want me to do? And so they make it up. I want you to go put your head under that piano. And when I say come, you have to roll over here. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to do it, you know. And so I just practiced. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to do it fast, happening all the way. Ready? And okay, now I'm going to do it like a disobedient kid. I'm going to be mad at you for doing, you know. So just train, practice them. And kids have so much fun, but it's teaching them what you expect and what is going to be, you know, what's disobedience looks like. Okay, last one, be gracious. Last is be gracious. Consider how patient and tender Christ is with you and reflect that same grace toward your kids. When you ask for obedience, be thoughtful about their circumstances, their frame. Like we talked about, you know, if you've kept them up late or whatever, like just be careful with what you command them to do and hold them accountable to with that. Be gracious. Obedience should be asked for thoughtfully in a spirit of care, not in rush or in frustration. All right, now lastly, for this point, the heart of obedience. When Paul calls children to obey your parents in the Lord, he's not just talking about external compliance, he's talking about obedience that flows from the inside out. Obedience that springs from the heart. Jesus said in Luke 6:45, the good person out of the good treasure of his heart produces good, and the evil person out of his evil treasure produces evil. For out of the abundance of the heart, his mouth speaks. That verse is like a spiritual MRI. It shows us what's really happening beneath our behavior and our children's behavior. The heart is not a random emotional center. It is the control room of the human being. It is the command station for life. Everything a person says or does flows out of the heart. Out of the overflow of the heart, we speak and we act. And what's inside eventually comes out. So the mouth and the hands are not the mouth and the hands, they're actually messengers. The mouth and the hands, the feet, they're actually messengers of what's in the heart, which means this. Our behavior is never detached from our beliefs or our loves. And our conduct is always revealing our character. So when our children disobey, we're not dealing with isolated misbehavior. We're seeing the visible fruit of an invisible root. We're seeing something visible in their life manifesting something invisible in their heart. Their hearts are speaking to us. The real question in any act of disobedience isn't, what did you do wrong? It's, what was ruling your heart? What did you desire? What did you love? What were you worshiping? And so as parents, we're not just targeting behavior in obedience, we're targeting the heart. We're targeting the heart. It's so easy to target behavior instead of the heart. Because what grabs our attention is the behavior. It's the raised voice. It's the eye roll. It's the bickering. It's the, you know, it's all that. And so we tend to respond. When they're interrupting, we're saying, stop interrupting. When they're yelling, we're saying, use inside voices. When they're fighting, we're saying, be nice to your sister. And a lot of the time, that's because we're addressing behavior and we're trying to get what we want, peace and quiet. But if all we do is target behavior, we're treating the symptom and ignoring the disease itself. We're just treating the symptoms and we're ignoring the disease. Our child's need is far deeper than outward conformity. They need inward transformation. Their words and deeds are just the overflow of their heart. So Here's the key truth I want you to remember. Changing behavior without changing the heart isn't commendable, it's condemnable. Changing the behavior, I'll say it again. Changing the behavior without changing the heart, or at work, working, maybe I should say that better. Working to change behavior without working to change the heart, without aiming at the heart, without targeting the heart, isn't commendable, it's condemnable. In fact, that's what Jesus confronts in Matthew 15. The Pharisees questioned Jesus because his disciples didn't wash their hands according to the religious tradition, but Jesus turned the accusation around on them. He said, "This people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me." The problem wasn't dirty hands. The problem was dirty hearts. They had perfected religious behavior but ignored inner righteousness. And Jesus says that's what's actually defiling. And then he explained it's not what goes into the mouth that defiles a person, but what comes out of the mouth that defiles a person. For out of the heart come evil thoughts and murder and adultery and sexual immorality, theft and false witness and slander. Out of the heart. Here's what that means for us as parents. Behavior modification without heart transformation ends up producing little Pharisees. Behavior modification without heart transformation produces little Pharisees. Children who learn how to act right on the outside, but whose hearts are far from God, are just little Pharisees. And often, in our desperation for quick results, we unintentionally train hypocrisy through behavioral shortcuts. We say things like, "If you're good in the store, I'll buy you candy." Or we'll say, "Next time you say shut up, it's a dollar in the jar." Or we say, "You've made mommy so sad, you ruined her day." Or we say, "That's it, I've had enough, you're gonna get it now." Or we say, "You have to say sorry or you're not getting the toy back." Each of those methods may secure short-term compliance, but they fail to shepherd the heart. They train kids to respond to external pressures. This is the complaint of every kid who ever was raised in the church and walked away. It's the requirement of external pressures, bribes and guilt and fears and embarrassment, rather than teaching them internal conviction. Paul Tripp used a vivid picture of this in his book, Instruments in Redeemer's Hands. He says, imagine an apple tree in your yard that produces nothing but gnarled, diseased fruit. So one afternoon, you go to the grocery store, you buy beautiful apples, and you staple them to the branches of that tree. From a distance, the tree looks good now. The fruit looks good. But give it a week, and the rot will return. You haven't cured the tree, you've just disguised the disease. And that's what behavior modification does. It's just apple stapling. And eventually, the rot will show. Ted Tripp says it this way: you must require proper behavior. God's law demands that. You cannot, however, be satisfied to leave the matter there. You must help your child ask the question that will expose the attitude of the heart that resulted in wrong behavior. How did his heart stray to produce this behavior? In what characteristic ways has his inability or refusal to know, trust, and obey God resulted in actions and speech that are wrong? That's the work of parenting the heart, helping children interpret their behavior in light of their relationship with God. So we want to get beyond, the next line there is getting beyond behavior, getting beyond behavior. How do we practically shepherd our hearts this way? Let me give you a few examples. Example one, 2-year-old Jack in the high chair. He's slowly pushing a Cheerio to the edge, watching you as he does it, because he knows you've told him, don't put food on the floor. 2-year-old, what do? You could ignore it and clean up later. That's abdication. You could feed him by hand so he won't drop it. Can't drop it if you don't have it. But that's just controlling him. You could give him sweeter food so that he'll eat it and stay happy, but that's just appeasement. Or you could discipline him for disobedience and then gently ask, "Jack, Mommy said no, and you disobeyed." Listen, this is what we would do for a two-year-old. That's pride. But God wants you to obey and be happy. Now, do I think my two-year-old's like, "Oh, okay, yeah, pride, I get it"? Of course not. But I am making the habit for myself and for them to start addressing their heart and not just their behavior. A little older, four-year-old Sandra won't share with her sister. What happens? World War III. Kids are shouting at each other, "Give me that, give me that." What happens? You start shouting, "Just give it to her." But that's only behavior modification. Or maybe you sit down with both girls and ask questions. "Why did you want to take that from your sister?" "Because I wanted it." So you wanted it more than you wanted to love your sister. Do you see that? You wanted the toy more than you wanted to love your sister. Now you're getting down into the heart. You're addressing sin beneath the surface. Six-year-old Micah interrupts during dinner again. You could simply say, "All right, you lose your dessert. No dessert for you tonight." And that would be a fair consequence. It's not wrong for you to do that. That could be a fair way to discipline him. But you should also take the extra moment to ask, "Micah, when you're interrupting, are you thinking of yourself or others?" Because you're getting down into the heart. These small kinds of conversations build an understanding in them that we are not just disciplining behavior, we're aiming for the heart. I'm going to skip a few things so we can have a few minutes of questions here. I think I'll just end just by saying, I think it's really important to get to the heart because that's really where you want to preach the gospel to them, right? So in correction, in training, and in discipline, what you're really trying to get at with your child is giving them Jesus, is preaching the gospel to them. And so it's not just behavior modification that we're trying to go for, it's heart transformation. And the only one who can really, you can target their heart, but the only one that can really transform their heart is Jesus. So by targeting it, you can then point them to Christ. You can help them to see that what they really wanted was not to obey God, was not to love as he has called us to love, and love as they've been loved. It was not to forgive as they've been forgiven in Jesus. And you can help point them back to Jesus. The whole point of all these things is to get down to that gospel level with them all the time and help them to see your heart is wayward from God, but God wants to forgive you and give a new heart that will want to walk in his ways. And that's what mom and dad are trying to do. We keep pointing you back to Jesus, keep pointing you back to that need for a new heart. We're going to talk about more about this in the next session when we talk about disobedience. And so I'll get more into that gospel connection. But let me just stop here.